Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is the Syrup Arcade Cast, Mobile Syrup and Syrup Arcade's gaming podcast. I'm your co-host, Dean Daly, and I'm here with the pod's other host, Brad Shankar. How are you doing today, Brad?
Great, thanks. How about you?
I'm having a all right day. It's kind of gloomy outside, but it's Toronto. It's whatever. We also have two special guests, which is super cool because this is the first time we've had two. I'll start with Chris Brown. And again, I'm going to make the same joke I made last time, not the singer, but our friend at Blue 8 Plus, who reviews games for the site and edits our podcast. How are you doing today, bud?
I am great. I live in gloomy weather, so thank you for bringing that up. I just love it.
And like I said, we have a fourth person on this podcast, and that is Steve Figari. Did I say that right?
Figari, but you know what? I get it all over the place, yeah.
Sorry, I've only ever seen your last name written, I guess.
That's
I've
true. Never actually said yeah. It. Yeah.
Steve also writes gaming reviews for Mobile Syrup. He also does sponsored posts for the website. And sometimes he just does general news for Mobile Syrup as well. You will see his name on the site probably more than myself, which is pretty cool. And thanks for joining us today. How were your holidays?
No. Thank you all for inviting me to the show. Yeah, the holidays were great. Now I'm just kind of back into it. And no better way to kick off 2023 with you guys, you know? I'm excited for this.
Yeah, that's very sweet.
Likewise.
I love that. I love that you're here. It's so great. So our topic this week is the games that we're excited to see in 2023, kind of. We're going to do a fun exercise where it's a fantasy league football video game edition where we're going to pick the games that we think will do the best this year. I personally just picked my favorite games as well because I think they'll just do awesome because that's whatever. But Chris Brown is going to lead us through it all. And yeah, here, Chris Brown, take it away.
All right, I don't know about you guys, but when I was young, there were some people that I hung out with who would do their football fantasy, and they would sit down every Sunday and watch the game. They'd get hyped up about the players. And I always thought it looked super cool, but I could not, for the life of me, bear to sit and watch football for 4 hours every afternoon.
I feel that.
Big time, yep.
Finally, the geeks have united and found a solution. Here we are. Today, we are doing the video game fantasy draft. And guys, I'm so excited about this. This is something I've wanted to do forever. And thank you to fantasycritic.games for coming up with this idea. And I'm just blatantly ripping it off. But this will be the Mobile Syrup edition. Are you guys ready? Here's how this is going to work really quickly for the audience. Basically, we are going to be judging games based off of their OpenCritic score. That is essentially the Metacritic, but specifically for video games. And so how it's going to work, we're each going to be drafting three games today. They are going to get 1 point for every score they are above 70. So if it's a game at the end of it, its average score is an 81, you will get 11 points. If it's over 90, you'll actually get 2 points. So those are the big scorers. So if you get a 92, that would then be 24 points. Now, with that being said, if you manage to draft a game like, say, like Saints Row last year, which ended up with like a 65, you will actually lose points. So you would get -1 point for anything under 70. There's no doubling if you go like below a 50. It's just going to still be 1 point. But with that being said, draft your games wisely. Don't be picking any super risky picks. Dean, I know what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking. I already have your picks in my brain. I see them.
No clue.
I see them.
You have no clue.
No, it's going to be fun because I feel like Dean and Brad, I've had the chance to like see a lot of your conversations about games and that sort of stuff. But Steve, you're a bit of a wild card. I have no idea what you might pick.
See, that's funny. I'm kind of on the opposite end where I feel like I've got a good touchstone for what Brad's going to pick or at least try to pick. Dean, Chris, you guys, total wild cards for me. So I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do here. I got a good list, though. I don't know about you guys, but I'm going out very competitive. This is like Dean said, he's going, you know, based on some of his favorite picks. I don't know if I'm going to be doing that. I think I'm going to go pretty competitive here because I think that's going to spice it up a little bit.
Uh-huh. I think I only play the best of games, so of course it's going to be rating high. Except for Pokemon, don't count that. That game, yeah. But of course, there's not going to be one of those this year, thank God. So I'm safe to pick my favorites.
So here's how it's going to work. We're going to be drafting in order. We rolled a D20 before this. None of us rolled high, and somehow Dean managed to roll a one, which frankly impressive.
I play D&D every 2 weeks, and if they're used to me rolling ones. So it's a...
It's a skill at that point. It's actually your secret. You know those like really bad superpowers? Your superpower is critically failing.
Yes. You're number one in our life. Heart, Dean.
Thank you, Brad.
The order is going to break down as such. I am going to be drafting first, followed by Steve, Brad, and then Dean. But Dean will get 2 picks in the reverse order will happen all the way back up. So we're going to do 3 picks each. We are not allowing remasters. We're not allowing expansions. But otherwise, any game that we think will come out in 2023 is on the table. So let's get this started. Now, I didn't want to take the obvious pick, and I promise I won't take all of the obvious picks.
Gee, I wonder what.
I have to do it. I have never been more excited about a video game in my entire life. I will be taking for my first pick, The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah.
No
shock.
Not
even on my list.
Oh. Okay, hold on. I want to hear about this for a second.
This guy doesn't play Zelda.
What?
Right? You don't,
I played like half of Breath of the Wild. I got like 3 of those guardian things, and I was like, you know what? I'm over this.
The story will solve itself out, you know.
Yeah, whatever.
Link will win.
He'll beat Ganon. Yeah. No surprise.
Dean, I have never felt more misunderstood in my life. That game spoke to my soul. But no, I think for me, this is a pick that makes a lot of sense, not just because the review score, but this has kind of come to define a lot of the open world experience. A lot of what we talked about with Elden Ring in our Game of the Year discussion was around this idea of how interesting the world was to explore, and they kind of borrowed a lot of the design elements from Breath of the Wild. So Tears of the Kingdom, been pushed back out of 2022 into 2023. The game will release this year. To me, it's a surefire pick, and I can't wait to get that 98 Metacritic score. It's just going to be absolutely incredible.
You just pressed the win button right there.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
It's like totally. When you're playing Overwatch, and you're playing Reaper, and you just hit Q, and you just get 5 instant kills. That's it. Done, right there. Now, I'm going to pass it off to Steve for your first pick of the draft. What are you going to take?
Yeah, I think like you, I got to go with something a little easy, a little one that, you know, is almost too big to fail. I think, you know, Tears of the Kingdom, a lot of anticipation for that one. So I'm going to go with one that has a lot of anticipation as well. And it is Marvel's Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
Coming from Insomniac Games, these guys have such a background and history of delivering A-plus games time and time again. Even, you know, some of like the ones that aren't as well received, like the Ratchet and Clank remake, still review very well. So I think this one, after Spider-Man and after Miles Morales, this one's an easy high 80s, maybe even a 90 if I'm lucky. So that one's my first pick.
If I'm not mistaken, like the only game in like the last, what, 20 years from them that maybe got sub 70, 60 area was like Fuse, and that had like a horrible development cycle. There was a lot of conflict with EA over that, so I don't even know if that really counts. So yeah, to your point, they just put out banger after banger. I mean, they put out Miles Morales and Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart in the span of like 6 months during a pandemic. That's insane.
This studio is just carrying the PlayStation 5, so I think just based on that alone, you bring in both those characters, you bring in Venom, you bring in Kraven, you bring in anything else related to Spider-Man, an easy win in my opinion.
Kraven's gonna be in it.
That's what they're saying. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, a little Kraven action,
a little hunting action.
They haven't like formally confirmed it, but the reveal trailer has like a Russian dude like talking about hunting them, which is like that's Kraven.
That's Kraven.
Yeah, that is true. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Well, and I just want to get a hype check because most likely not going to release this year. Where is everybody sitting with Wolverine from Insomniac?
I'm excited.
Oh, yeah.
It's the Miles Morales team that's leading that. I'm sure it'll be great, but yeah, that's definitely years away.
Yeah, totally not for a while, but yeah,
2024 is my bet. I mean, this I like so. We just said, it's they're turning around games so quickly. I have faith. I believe.
I just really want them to lean hard into their Canadian roots with Logan.
Yes,
just selfishly, obviously, because we're all Canadian. So,
next up, we're going to have Brad. What is your first pick of 2023?
Yeah, I mean, I expected that whoever got ahead of me would get Zelda, so that's why I didn't even put it on my list either. I had it as a backup just in case, but I mean, I have to go with, you know, I have to be on brand, Final Fantasy 16. I mean, that's A, for going to the Dean's point, you know, it's one of my most anticipated games, but also it's a safe bet. I mean, it's from Creative Business Unit 3, which is the Square Enix team that makes Final Fantasy 14. That is a studio that took an MMO that was like one of the most embarrassing launches in the history of games and turned it into one of the greatest success stories ever. It just keeps getting better and better and better over time. You have the writer of the Heavensward expansion, the critically acclaimed expansion, up to level 60, free trial, blah, blah, blah. You have the writer of that expansion, and you have one of the lead combat designers from Devil May Cry working on the battle system. So you have great story and great combat right there. It's a proven team. Like, I have no doubt in my mind, like, at the very least, this will be high 80s, if not in the 90s, I think. I can't wait. And that's supposed to come out in June. So
I have never felt more confident about a Final Fantasy game in my lifetime.
Yeah, like, I'm going through the 14 right now. I'm on Shadowbringers because it's such a time sink in it, you know. And going through some of the like trials and stuff that they launched, like the passion that Naoki Yoshida, the producer of the game, the director of 14, that he has for not just games, but like Final Fantasy specifically, like all of the references, all of the Easter eggs, all of the love and attention that he had. Like, you can tell, like, this is a guy who grew up playing Final Fantasy and he loves it. So this is kind of like a spiritual throwback to the original games with like the medieval setting and everything. But also he's very smart about what things to change and improve. So I've no doubt in my mind this game's going to be great. It's definitely going to, I would be shocked if it's not up for Game of the Year alongside Breath of the Wild and Spider-Man.
I'm also very excited for it. I've barely played any Final Fantasy, but 15, and now I got to play 16. Brad hates that.
Dean, you're the only person I know who has like a fervent passion for 15, and I love it. I love that.
Well, I've noticed, and I'm not knocking people for it, but I've noticed that the people who tend to like 15 the most, it was their first Final Fantasy, because the more people like me who've played the older ones, that's not what we wanted from it. And it was, so you could maybe call us jaded, but I respect that that game was made within like 3 years because it had such a prolonged development cycle, and then a new director came in and basically, so the fact that the game turned out the way as okay as it did in my eyes is still impressive in and of itself. But, you know, I'm glad you like it though, Dean.
Yeah, I mean, it's got me into more Final Fantasy stuff, and now I'm excited for 16.
Dean, I'm going to let you pick, but before you do, I just took a second, and I wrote on my phone what I think you're going to pick. So
fun
that if afterwards, because you said, I would have no idea. Let's do it. Let's get that first pick and see if I can guess what you picked.
My first pick is Lies of P.
Love it. Whoa. Love it. That's a great
pick. Was not
pick.
What I wrote down.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought.
You got me. All right, Dean, what is it about Lies of P that has you so excited?
So my favorite game is Bloodborne. It's just plain old, it's Bloodborne. It reviewed well. It's super fun. It's a Souls-like. And people are nostalgic for Bloodborne. People want Bloodborne again. And From Software is not giving us Bloodborne. And neither is Bluepoint, who remade Demon's Souls. I don't know if they're remaking, you know, Bloodborne, and who knows when that's happening. So Lies of P is the closest thing we have to that, I think. And I think people like myself who miss Bloodborne, who want Bloodborne on a new console, are going to just love Lies of P. I didn't get to play it, obviously. They did some game demos earlier last year, in 2022. And Fextra Life, the guy who does that channel, who loves Bloodborne and loves Souls-like, says this is the closest game he's ever played to a like that perfectly matched that. And I'm like, yeah, give me Pinocchio, give me that like dark fantasy setting, and give me Bloodborne, and I'm here.
Steve, have you had the chance to play Bloodborne?
I love Bloodborne. I love everything that From Software does in terms of like the Soulsborne games, and I had that on my list, kind of ranked a little lower because that was one on the cusp of like, I'm not so sure this could end up being like another Bloodborne, or I could definitely see this falling closer to like Immortal Shell, if anyone's familiar with that game, where the controls are fantastic, but there's something just about it. So I don't know. I would have to play Liza P in order to have like a great barometer for that game, but I'm excited for it nonetheless.
Well, and Brad, I mean, it's one of those things where this is coming from a studio who doesn't have a proven track record. Mm-hmm. Like, where do you sit in terms of, I know you're not like a huge FromSoft guy, but in terms of your review score guess.
Yeah, so Bloodborne is the only one of their games that I actually played through in its entirety. I love that game. I think the faster paced nature of it, where it isn't so much you're running around in circles holding up your shield sort of thing, I don't like that as much about the From games. But it wasn't like too action oriented, like Sekiro kind of threw me off a little bit for that. But yeah, no, Bloodborne was perfect. The Victorian setting, I love all that. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I think it could go one of two ways. I mean, you see situations like with Rocksteady and Batman, for instance. They'd made like one PS2 game, and then they came out of nowhere and made like the best Batman game ever at that time. It's still one of the greatest licensed games ever. So I feel, and that's because they're just big Batman fans. So I feel like Lies of P, I don't remember the developer's name, but presumably they are obviously big From fans that, you know, if they're approaching it the right way and, you know, the passion's there. Yeah, I think it could turn out well.
Yeah. Look at my first vote.
Kudos to you for that pick.
Yeah, that's a good pick.
Thank you.
I love it because it's so out there, and it's smart because you got to throw me off and still get your more like traditional pick. So, Dean, you get to go twice in a row. What is your second pick?
Yeah, and this one is the basic one. I'm going to pick Hogwarts Legacy. I know it's controversial, super controversial because of JK, who is a TERF. And if you want to know more about that, Brad Schenker has a great article regarding the readings you can do to learn more about what JK said and how it's affected the community, the trans community. So I'm not a fan of her, but I think Hogwarts Legacy will do really well, and this has to do with ratings. And if Liza P doesn't rate well, I should have some points of Hogwarts Legacy. And personally, myself, I still have a Harry Potter poster. It doesn't specifically say Harry Potter, but it has all the houses on it. It's like the actual animals they're based off of.
So, Dean, I have a question right up front for you then.
Yeah.
Which house are you going to be going into?
Skyrim. Okay.
Skyrim.
Whoa. What the hell? Slytherin.
I mean, hey, Skyrim re-releases every other year, so it makes sense that you would go into Skyrim at some point while you're playing. But no, Slytherin. Okay. So you've already seen your house and you know what you're doing.
Totally. I did Pottermore when I was younger, and it told me I was Slytherin at heart, and I felt that it was right.
When's the last time that we got not just a Harry Potter game, a good Harry Potter game? Like, what is it? Like, Quidditch World Cup? Was it?
Probably.
I'm genuinely trying to think of the last time there was a great one.
Goblet of Fire was an awesome Harry Potter game. I don't know the timeline on World Cup, but Goblet of Fire was really good.
I feel like those are all around like the GameCube into like the next generation type of area. So this is going to be the first big budget Harry Potter game in a long time.
Well, and it's the one that's like fulfilling the fantasy that you've always had as a kid. Like, obviously, pretty much every game we've gotten since is just adapting the movies, adapting the books. It's like you're playing as Harry. So there's kind of a formula to it. But, you know, everyone's wanted to, pick your own house, you know, go to potions class, go to defense against the dark arts class, fly around the school with the hippogriff, and, you know, it being its own story, you kind of carving your own legacy, you know, in the world of Harry Potter without any of the Harry Potter baggage. Obviously, yeah, that's the big appeal for it. So that makes it even more exciting.
And that's why it's my pick. I think it will rate well. I think people are going to enjoy it, but despite all the controversy, but I'm kind of excited for it, man.
I just want to say I'm very disappointed because my pick for you was not taken. And I think by the time we get back to you, it might be Dean. And I think you're going to look back.
I'm sure it will be. I actually know what you, I think I know what you're thinking of now that I didn't
say. I know what your third one is.
We'll see.
Yeah, but now I wanted the points, and I think that's going to really rate.
Okay. All right. That's it. He's competitive. I like it. Brad, you get your second pick. You already took Final Fantasy from my grasp, which, you know, I guess is payback for Zelda. But hey, what is your second pick?
Yeah. No, kind of thinking what you guys are going to pick and to keep things interesting, I'm going to go with Resident Evil 4. We were talking about it a little bit beforehand, so just kind of expand on that. I think taking the format that Resident Evil 2 remake had, where it's taking this classic beloved game and bringing it into a new generation, but even more so for Resident Evil 4, because I've always been of the mind that if you're going to do a remake, I don't want the same thing again. Like, I want you to be more bold and do something different. That's why I was kind of uninterested in the Last of Us remake last year, and I kind of annoys me that they call it a remake, because it's like, it's literally the exact same game. They didn't change anything, and hey, that's cool for newcomers, but for me, like, I want something new. That's why I love Final Fantasy VII remake so much, and that's kind of what it seems like they're doing with Resident Evil 4. It's, you know, the original game is beloved, it's amazing, but it's obviously not really scary. If anything, it's more of a thriller, I guess you could say, an action thriller. There's some tension when you're like fighting a bunch of enemies at once, but other than like that creepy regenerator thing in the freezer down in the dungeons, that's probably like the only like outright horror section in that game. So I appreciate that this is going for a more grounded and gritty approach to it, where they are kind of expanding the story, because, you know, Shinji Mikami, the creator of Resident Evil, who did the Resident Evil 4, he even admitted he wrote that story in 3 weeks, so it's not a good story, he admits. So he even said he wants them to expand on the story in a remake, so it seems like they're doing that, you know, making Ashley less of an annoying character, making Leon less of a superhero, which is fun in the original game, but, you know, so everything about that, you know, the gameplay tweaks, like you can parry a chainsaw with a knife. There's like some stealth elements, but like Leon crouching around, like I think, you know, again, bringing in that team that worked on Resident Evil 2, which is, again, like the gold standard for doing a remake, that pretty much, right? So yeah, I think it's gonna be good. I mean, I think there'll be some hardcore purists who are like, I don't like that change, but I think for the most part, people are gonna be like, okay, this is a really cool thing that's like a loving homage to the original game, but it also does its own thing. Kind of like what we're hearing with The Last of Us show right now, where it does take some changes, but on the whole, it's a very faithful thing and it's getting universal acclaim. I think we're going to see that with RE4 as well.
Yeah.
You summed it up.
Yeah, honestly.
Yeah, like, I've never played an RE game, so I'm like, I don't really know much to say here. Well, I guess I played, I think there was one with like zombies or something. Is there something with zombies? Or am I making something?
They're all zombies.
They're all zombies? Okay. Yeah. I was playing one with my friend. It was co-op.
RE5.
Oh, Raccoon City.
Five or six.
Yeah.
Five.
Yeah.
It was a while ago, so I have no clue. But it was fun.
And that game's like straight up racist, so I'm surprised you played that one.
Big time.
Oh, snap. I mean, I was just shooting zombies. No.
Yeah. Well, it just feels like Capcom is back on top of the world. I don't know. Like,
yes.
5 years ago, Capcom was at their lowest point. They had come out with like DMC and a whole bunch of other properties that just didn't feel like they were connecting with their audience. It felt like they were pushing to make money. And then something switched. They came out with Monster Hunter World. We started to get the RE remakes. Resident Evil 7 came out of nowhere. And I remember seeing that reveal trailer at, what was it, E3 2016.
E3, I think. Yeah.
That moment, the kitchen VR demo.
The kitchen demo, yeah.
And it turned out they had been showing it at E3 the previous 2 years, and no one knew that it was Resident Evil. Everyone was like, wait, is this... what was it? The Kojima game that got canceled.
PT. Like, is this a PT thing? Silent Hill.
I loved PT.
Me and too. And it just feels like Capcom can do no wrong at the moment. It's between Devil May Cry, Monster Hunter, Resident Evil. Every property they have is just blowing up in the best way.
Yeah, well, and you know, to your point, and I think without going into a huge tangent about it, I think there was a period during the like PS3, PS4 era where a lot of these Japanese publishers were kind of just chasing Western trends. Like Resident Evil 6 was just like a focus tested here's what Western people will like, we think. So it's like, here's a campaign that's all action-y. Here's whatever, you know, Raccoon City was like some wannabe live service, it feels like. And we see that with like Square Enix as well. They had a bunch of games that didn't take off. But I feel like now they've kind of recaptured their identity and realized, you know, we don't have to be like Western games. We can have our own flavor and be unique. And that is good. And yeah, Resident Evil, they have two things going on. You know, they got the first person games and they have the third person remakes, which is such a cool way of, you know, here's classic Resident Evil if you want it. Here's something new if you don't, because some people don't like the first person. And, you know, RE8 even has the option to switch between both now, which is really cool. So yeah, Capcom is killing it.
And to your point, I mean, I just want to say, like, when people think of classic Resident Evil, they usually think of 4, so what better way than with a remake in this new, you know, golden age for Capcom? So I think that's a really good pick on your behalf.
Now, Steve, are you going to continue the trend of really good picks?
I hope so. I'll let the panel judge that, but I do think that I have a pretty safe one in terms of getting some pretty solid points, and that is Forza Motorsport. Turn 10,
whoa,
every single time they come out with a mainline Forza game, it does not fail. This is, as, in my opinion, as safe of a bet you can get in 2023. And if we're doing, like, you know, a fantasy draft, because yeah, every single time they come out, they kind of raise the benchmark in terms of how far you can push the Xbox hardware. And this game, which was, you know, shown pretty in-depthly last year during their E3, not E3 showcase. They showed a really great day and night cycle, all these like in real time rendering features of puddles and, you know, particles and all this stuff. And it looks really advanced in terms of a first party game. So I think if they're able to nail this 2023 launch, which I think they are. I mean, they have Xbox just announced their developer direct showcase for later this month as the, we're recording this. So the fact that they're going to feature the game during that direct, I'm pretty confident that's going to make this 2023 window. So yeah, turn 10. Don't let me down this year, please. Keep up that momentum year over year of just really solid sim racers, which I enjoy. I mean, I might be in the minority here amongst the group, but I really like just hitting the track and kind of just vibing out and going around and around in some pretty awesome lifelike cars.
Yeah, this isn't a pick I would ever even think of, but it's going to rate well. It's a smart choice. And if you like it, that's a bonus.
And I think just as a test of a barometer here, Forza Motorsport 7, which came out in 2017, was one of like the weaker ones critically, only because they came out and it had a whole bunch of microtransactions, which the studio then, you know, reversed their course on. But it still came out, and I'm looking on Open Critic, 85. So if they can come out without egregious microtransactions, I'm looking at a high 80, maybe even a 90 if I'm lucky.
If only Gran Turismo had learned that lesson about the microtransactions.
If only.
All right, well, that will bring me to my second pick. And I kind of hinted at this on our last podcast when we were talking Game of the Year. I said there's one game that I think will score the highest if it's not Tears of the Kingdom. And that is Baldur's Gate 3.
Hmm.
This nice. Is another studio who just kind of knock it out of the park every time. And I was a little worried because when the game came into early access, there actually were a few like reviews that came out. And it's sitting at a solid 70 right now. And I was like, wait, okay, what does that mean? But that was 2.5 years ago at this point. It has been in early access that entire period. And they're known for these long, long development cycles for these games. And if there's any studio that I believe can turn it around, really expand on things, really nail the systems, it's this studio. And so this is, again, a personal pick for me. Maybe it will not be a 90. I think it could be because their past games have both been in the 88 to 92 range. This is my pick. If it's not Tears of the Kingdom, this is my big bet swinging for the fences with a 90.
Well, and to your point about, you know, the last 2.5 years, I feel like every other month I read on like gamedeveloper.com or one of those like more niche sites like, oh, this really prolific developer from this really acclaimed studio has joined Larian to work on Baldur's Gate 3. Like, you know, the number of like BioWare alums alone at that studio, like especially in the, you know, BioWare's kind of not really done a lot lately. I feel like a lot of people have continued to leave BioWare, especially because Dragon Age has been taking like 10 years, it feels like, and just going to Larian. So yeah, to your point, I don't see any reason why that wouldn't at least be in the 80s.
And I think a really good thing that a game like Baldur's Gate has is that it's so niche. It's only going to be reviewed by those niche reviewers who are going to inherently enjoy that kind of game. Myself included, I'm looking forward to Baldur's Gate 3. This is high on my list as far as most anticipated games. But for more, and I don't want to throw out the word like casual, but for a more casual audience who might not like Baldur's Gate, or the game might not resonate with them as much, they're probably not going to review the game to begin with. So I think a game like Baldur's Gate is going to go for those hardcore of hardcore D&D players. So I think I think that's a good one.
Yeah, it's interesting because you're right. They're not going after the Skyrim crowd. It's not, this is not a broad appeal game. Baldur's Gate back in the day, you know, Baldur's Gate 1, 2 were very, very popular, but that was because they were hardcore PC games at a time when the only people playing PC games were people who probably played D&D already. It was a very, very different time in gaming history. And for anybody who doesn't know a lot about Baldur's Gate 3, this is a not quite turn-based. Well, no, it is. It is turn-based. It's kind of like a mix between strategy RPG and traditional D&D. And this one is leaning very, very hard into the D&D aspects. This is the same team behind the Divinity Original Sin. Took me a second. They developed Divinity Original Sin and Original Sin 2. Both scored really, really well. But those games kind of, they really wanted to make a Baldur's Gate game. And then they just went into a different universe to play around with it. And this time they're actually bringing in dice rolls. They're leaning much, much more into the relationships between the party members. Everything that I've seen in every developer update just seems like they care so much. When they do their little developer videos, they get dressed up and they're so passionate about the game that it's just infectious. And so I'm hoping that that spills over into the people also playing the game. And that's my hope. But that'll be my second pick, which means for my third pick, and this will be my final pick, which leaves me with a lot of options here. I didn't expect to have these, so I need to make a pick. Do I go risky? Do I take the Dean approach with Lies of P, or do I play it safe?
Do it.
Go risky? All right, you know what? I will. You know what? I will take the bait.
Do it.
I'm going to go with an indie game on this one. I don't believe the studio has put out anything. And this was supposed to come out last year, but was actually delayed because the studio was largely in Ukraine. This is Replaced.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So this is a game that I am so excited about. This is one is a side-scrolling action narrative game. It's using sort of that 2D, 3D look that has been popularized lately through games like Triangle Strategy and that sort of dynamic lighting. I don't really know how to describe it other than it looks really cinematic and yet classic gaming. Mm-hmm. So you've got 2D pixel art mixed with 3D environments and really, really beautiful, almost like ray traced lighting. And there's something about this. It's set in like a cyberpunk future setting, dynamic combat. It's not your typical sort of Metroidvania style combat. It's no, like the camera changes the angles and that sort of stuff every time that you're doing it. And it's melee combat that feels very dynamic. We have not had any gameplay previews as far as I'm aware. It has been very tight-lipped. But every time we have seen the game, it's looked better than the last. And it reminds me of a game, The Last Night, which was shown off at Microsoft's E3 2017 conference, I think. And that just kind of disappeared into the wild. And this came along, very similar art style and just same level of polish. I'm so, so excited about this game. No idea if it will score well. It could be a 60 for all I know. But in my heart, it's a 90. So that's where I'm going for my third pick with Replaced.
Sick. So Chris is out.
That was it.
Take the L.
Tears of the Kingdom. Nah, can't carry me through this one. I chose Replaced. No. I'm done.
I personally really like this pick. I mean, this one is a game that's on my radar. But going back to when it was first shown during, I think, 2021's Game Awards, it's one of those games just like Cuphead that as soon as you see it on the screen, you see the art style, you see the animations, you're like, what is that? I want that right now. And yeah, ever since I saw that first footage, it's kind of been like burned into the back of my brain where I'm like, okay, every so often I'll go online, I'm like, okay, where are the dev updates on this? Funny enough, I looked it up and their website still says coming to Xbox in 2022. So I think they're busy or they have a lot going on.
To your point, though, about the Cuphead analogy, I think that's a good one because Xbox tends to partner with a lot of really good indies and spotlight mm-hmm. them at their shows. Like, obviously, Cuphead's the big example. Tunic was a big one from last year, yep. Another Canadian game, and obviously Replace. So I feel like the fact that it's getting so much backing from Xbox, that because their ID at Xbox program is really good. They've shipped so many indie games, so many good indie game success stories. Yeah, I feel like having Xbox in their corner with that is kind of a testament to the quality of how that game's going to be.
Because they always have their finger on the pulse. You even go all the way back to, you know, Inside and Limbo.
Yep.
Xbox yep. always is like a tastemaker for mm-hmm. good indie games.
Yeah, 100%. So yeah, that's a great pick.
Yeah. Let's hope. And you know what? I do hope Game Pass plays a bit of a factor because we've seen it. Maybe High on Life didn't score the best, so maybe it's not the best example. But you know what? Even if the critics don't love it, maybe it'll find an audience and become one of those cult classics because, you know, we've seen a lot of games find success on Game Pass where maybe they otherwise wouldn't have.
Well, High on Life was literally going to be a Stadia game. That's the Wild. Funniest
oh,
thing.
Was it really?
It was supposed to be a Stadia game, and then it went on to Game Pass, and it was the biggest Game Pass launch of a third-party game ever, which is hilarious.
Hey, we can all thank Google.
Yeah.
Thank you, Google overlords.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you.
1 week today, Stadia dies, RIP.
Oh, that's right. Should we take a moment of silence, or should we let Steve go on to his next pick?
I think we should let Steve go on to his next pick.
Yeah, we should just move past it.
Right. That would be giving Stadia more attention and time than Google.
You're
did,
right.
So. Google did.
My mistake. Steve, your final pick for the beginning of the year.
And Chris, you had me sweating as once you said indie game, because as soon as you said that, I was like, oh man, this is going to be a tough one and he's going to steal my pick. And Brad, I think you know where I'm going with this one. And it's to no surprise, anyone that knows me knows how much confidence I have in this game. And it's Hollow Knight Silksong.
Oh man, good luck.
Very good.
Easy game for points. Hollow Knight came out years and years ago, and it sits currently at a 90 on OpenCritic. This game has been long in development. The anticipation for this game is so high that it's almost too big to fail. I think that, you know, Team Cherry would have to deliberately screw this game up in order for it just to not be received well. I think mechanically, Hollow Knight itself is such a mechanically sound game that transferring anything over to Silksong, that's an immediate win. The character, art design, everything about it resonates so much with a core audience that I think, again, maybe it's not a general game that will, you know, inherit a general audience, but I think people who love Hollow Knight, love Soulsborne games, or love weird artistic art style games are going to resonate with Silksong. So I think that is going to the only thing. And I know Xbox showcased it last year and they're like, oh, this is going to come out in the first 6 months. I don't personally believe
that's
that.
What I'm saying.
I think the only risk is that, you know, Team Cherry just needs more time with this game. But I'm going to take that risk, even if it's not first 6 months. I don't see a reality where I'm not playing this game by the end of the year. So I'm willing to run the risk for those good points.
Steve, we can only hope for you because I feel like this game is... People thought it's been supposed to come out like a year ago or the year before, and it's just never coming out. My friends keep talking about it, and I keep seeing them. I'm like, man, I still have time to finish Hollow Knight because this game is just not
coming out. You probably do. You probably have time to finish it twice, if we're being totally honest. but fingers crossed that they come out and deliver.
So I'm going to be honest. That was my safe pick. That was my,
okay,
that's a surefire 90. Like, I'm with you. There's no doubt. If this game comes out this year, it will review well. I remember the first 5 minutes of the game, I fell in love with it. You boot it up and you're just sitting on that bench. You hop off. The music is playing. You see this art style. You wander over and it's just the sense of discovery. Every moment, the first time you meet a creature, it's that parallel fear and wonderment that you don't find very often with side-scrolling games like this. Metroidvanias are a dime a dozen these days, and yet Hollow Knight stands out in that crowd. It's truly one of the highlights of the last generation, and I think Silksong looks faster, it looks fiercer. It's just, I think they are taking the time because they want to deliver, and it's a very small team. If I remember, the first game was made by a team of a core of three people, I believe, and so here we are, Australian development team, just want to put out the best product possible. If this drops, and I think it will, I believe, I don't know about the first 6 months. It was the Game Pass, here's what's coming in the next year, and it was one of their summer showcases. But it will drop this year. I have faith. And Steve, I think you just raked up a whole bunch of points.
Thank you.
Brad, your final pick.
Yeah, this has been a really interesting discussion so far, because you guys have picked some games that I wasn't expecting. I really like the indie picks, and especially Lies of P, I feel, came out of nowhere. So
good.
That was good on that, Dean. So instead of going for a big AAA safe sort of pick again, I'm going to have to go with an indie game. I'm going to go with Sea of Stars. That is an indie game, and it's Canadian too, from Sabotage in Quebec City. That is a studio that, you know, to your point about Metroidvania style games, their first game, The Messenger, was one of the most well-received Ninja Gaiden inspired games of the last several years. It did a really cool thing where it like switched from NES to SNES art style midway through and kind of goes back and forth between that. A lot of like really clever, cool design elements of it. It was a surprisingly funny game too. And I just feel like taking all of that and applying it to a JRPG inspired game, I mean, it basically looks like a modern Chrono Trigger, which is great. Like, they even have the Chrono Trigger composer Mitsuda involved with it. Like, he was so impressed with The Messenger, he wanted to be a part of this game. And if you look at that man's list of games, he only involves himself with like good JRPGs, like Chrono Trigger, like Xenoblade. So like, obviously this isn't a JRPG, but very JRPG inspired. You know, I got to attend a preview for it last year, and everything they said was speaking to me as a lifelong JRPG fan. You know, they're kind of avoiding grinding, kind of avoiding random encounters. The combat is very Chrono Trigger inspired, where it's about collaboration between teammates and team moves and everything. I think that game's going to be great. I'm so excited for it. It looks like everything that, again, as a big JRPG fanboy, I feel like it's one of those games that, because it is making a lot of those quality of life improvements, it could find an audience with people who maybe don't like those older games as much. I know, Steve, I've kind of ragged on you a bit for not really being a fan of those older games.
Hey, but
I feel like something like this, is with the changes they're making, could be something that appeals to someone like you, or at least maybe you would give it a try. I don't know, but I think it looks really good.
No, just quickly jumping in. Yeah, I think that the changes that they are making does speak to someone like me, who traditionally stays away from turn-based Japanese RPGs only because of the pace. So I think, you know, it's definitely on my radar of something I want to pick up. And I think, to your point, it's going to review pretty well, I think, just based off everything the team's putting into it.
Yeah, like even like the Q&A that we were doing, like, you know, because I'm someone, we've talked about it, the games that are just so long for no reason. Like, even Xenoblade, as amazing as it is, I haven't gotten to it yet, despite wanting to, because Chris raved about it. It's just scarily big.
Yeah.
But then you ask your stars, the team, they're like, yeah, you know, we're it's very curated. You know, it's not open world. It's more of like sort of larger areas here and there. And it feels like manageably big, which is good. So yeah, again, everything they're saying about that game, just I can't wait.
I mean, and it's a Canadian development team, so if it doesn't score well, they'll at least say I'm sorry. Dean, where, if you had to guess for Sea of Stars, one, what's your familiarity, and two, if you had to guess what the review score is, 70s, 80s, 90s, where do you think it's gonna fall?
Well, I'm not super familiar with it, so I don't want to even guess. But
it's okay. I can tell by your expression you're saying 60s.
By my expression, I'm stressed.
If I If I remember correctly, I haven't looked it up recently, but I believe the Messenger is high 80s. I think it's like 86, 87. And I feel like generally, you know, with a second project, you know, they can take all the lessons they've learned from the previous games. And now that they're obviously a little more in tune with the Japanese developers, with Mitsuda and everything, I'm sure they've had a lot of, like, if not direct communication with them, but with like that side of development, that they've, you know, been being a lot more inspired by it. And yeah, I just have, I have every bit of confidence that they're going to just take everything and make it better. And we even saw, like, at the end of last year, Unchained Echoes came out and kind of got a lot of praise for being like a throwback JRPG. And I feel like
that game, I know about
this game, is going to be even better. So
I'm with you. I'm with you. Dean, why are you stressed?
Because you guys left me with so many games. There are so many options.
I know which one you're going to pick.
I don't know if I want to pick it now.
But it's going to be fire. It's going to be so good. If we're all thinking of the same game, like that is again one that you know is going to score.
We know what you said. You're
I don't
pick
know.
Your favorites.
I'm on the edge of my seat here because Dean is such a wild card in my from where I'm sitting that I'm like
okay.
It could be
anything. He has been such a wild card too. I thought I had this pick like number one, and no, proven wrong. Okay. Dean, what is it going to be? What? Okay, well, actually, because we've already taken our picks, why don't you talk us through a few of your picks? What are your maybe top three that you're thinking of?
Okay, I'm thinking of Redfall.
Redfall.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm thinking of the Arcane game. Arcane game is typically rate really well, and they're really fun. I definitely love Deathloop and Dishonored 1, but I liked it a lot too. So yeah, I'm thinking of Redfall. I'm also thinking of Hades 2, but my fear there of Hades 2 is that it may not come out this year.
I can almost guarantee it will not.
Yeah, it's 100% not. Don't squander your...
Even if it did, you know, you set up the rules, it would be early access if it did release this year, so that wouldn't count anyways.
That
pick it anyways.
That helps, yeah. Screw you, Steve.
0 points. That'll be cool.
And then, so then that leaves me with... Star Wars Survivor. I just have to, and I know that's
there's
what
the one
thought.
I've had it written down this entire time. I was like, how is he not taking Jedi Survivor?
I was looking at Atomic Heart. I think that because it's gonna be a Game Pass game, it's gonna do that well too. But I have this, it's on my list, it's number three. So I just should just I guess stick with my list. I love Star Wars. Everyone loves Star Wars. Who doesn't love Star Wars? I mean, tons of people don't like Star Wars. But it's the first one was so good. Fallen Order was so good. So I feel like Survivor, they're just gonna work on the things that, like, they're just gonna fix everything, and it's gonna come out super polished and super great. And Cameron Monahan.
Yeah, you were right.
It's super hot. So I think that should help its rating as well. So, you know.
That beard.
I anticipate every single review to start out with that as the subheader. Cameron Monahan is super hot. Yeah,
he's the hottest guy. I don't know. He's very hot as Cal Kestis. And I'm super excited for it. And who doesn't love, like, throwing people around if you're, like, Jedi telekinetic powers, but which is, you can do that in Atomic Heart too, which is why I was kind of like, that's number four on my list.
What we were saying about like Insomniac, I think really applies to Respawn too. That's a studio that they haven't even been around for that long, but every game they've put out has been really good. Like, you know, they've, in the span of like 10 years, which is crazy to think about because the first Titanfall was 2014. Right. So, you know, we've gotten two Titanfalls, Apex Legends, and Jedi Fallen Order, and they even did a VR game, which I think won an Oscar for the documentary stuff it did. But anyways, they've done four really big games, and then now Jedi Survivor, and all of them reviewed very well. All of them, they're like very consistent studio. That's a very polished team. They know what they're doing. They're working on three Star Wars games right now. I think there's an FPS and then a strategy game too, right? Mm-hmm. I think was the third one. Yeah. Yep. So obviously, EA likes what they're seeing with them. To Disney must like what they're seeing with them to give them so many keys to the Star Wars kingdom. And yeah, to your point, I think, yeah, the first one was really good. You know, it did have its issues here and there, but I feel like it's one of those games that could really benefit from a sequel, like an Uncharted to Uncharted 2 or Assassin's Creed to Assassin's Creed 2 style thing, where, like, if they fix all of the things, tighten things up a bit, I could easily see it being like a 90s scoring game.
Honestly, the one thing that they just need to fix is the map. and everything else could be the same.
Like just speaking to it, one of the changes that I really, really like that they've spoken about, with it being sort of that Metroidvania style where you kind of have to come back, they've made this one more open in terms of the design. So it's less linear than the first game, which I think is really going to benefit it, because again, that sense of discovery. Every time that you would go to a new planet, it felt like you're going somewhere so unique. And I really hope they lean even harder into the narrative elements, because I don't know about you guys, the end of that game, terrifying. Oh, yeah. So, I will not spoil anything
so good.
Because it's worth, for anybody who has not played it, it's both so on PlayStation Plus, the expansions, and Game Pass. Mm-hmm. It's worth playing through just to even play through that ending. It's not like some major twist, but it's so cool. It's what I've always wanted to see happen, and you feel the dread in that moment. So it's setting up a lot of cool stuff for the sequel, which I'm excited about.
Yeah, I think for me, what makes it even more appealing is the, and we saw that with the first game, it's largely its own thing. Like, you know, there are some connections here and there to the larger universe, but my big problem with Star Wars is that in the Disney era, is everything has to connect to Luke Skywalker or Anakin Skywalker. Sure. And it's so annoying, or by extension, the supporting cast.
It's so nice we're all related, though, you know? All of us are related to Luke Skywalker. So,
you know, it's this big galaxy, but everyone's related. You know?
We all know C-3PO.
So, I like that, you know, Respawn, they're part of the challenge with the first game was introducing characters that you'd care about, and I'd argue they did a really good job with that. People like Cal, people really like Seer, people like the handmaiden or the night sister, what's her name, I'm blanking on, but she was really cool as well. Mistra or Mythis or something, either way, they've introduced characters that people like and want to see again, so that hard part is over. It's just, you know, kind of giving us more of them, fleshing out the world. Even like the villain seems to be like pretty interesting so far, the guy who's like in the cryotube or whatever.
Oh, Sephiroth.
I haven't heard that, but that's great, actually. So I just feel like, and we even saw with Andor last year, it got so much praise because it was its own thing and it was so different, and that's what was so refreshing. And I just feel like this game, you know, again, if executed well, could kind of satisfy that itch as well.
Well, I think one of the funniest things is that, to your point, it does so much to remove itself from like the Skywalker stuff, but does enough to keep it in line with Star Wars canon, with, you know, not giving anything away again, but that ending, where that ending takes place is directly referred to in Obi-Wan and stuff like that. And then you have, you know, characters popping up from, you know, Rogue One and stuff like that. Like, there are these little touchstones to say, okay, Cal does exist in this grander universe. We're just not going to shoehorn in all these characters and all these references to make it feel, oh, okay, we're just, you know, re-spinning an old Star Wars tale or something like that.
Well, and the smart thing that they did with the first game is, besides making him like a, like he never really finishes Jedi training sort of thing, so that's kind of a good narrative and mechanical excuse for how he's like redeveloping his powers over time, but they really explored a really cool story there about survivor's guilt. Yeah. Like the fact that he's like this Padawan. Yeah. He's like, so that was a really cool way of sort of enhancing what we already know about Order 66 and kind of adding a layer to that whole story, because that whole territory between episode 3 and 4 is being well worn at this point. So, but Respawn still found a really cool way to flesh it out with Cal. So yeah, I have no doubt in my mind that they're just going to expand on that even more with this game. So yeah, that's a good
thing. So we're all excited. That's great. I love it.
And March, 2 months
away.
Yes,
very soon. It's cool that I picked a game that I know for sure is coming out, because I'm not 100% sure Lies of P is going to come out this year. I mean, I really hope it does. If they said 2023, but
it's the gaming industry. Anything could be delayed tomorrow.
Fire Emblem that could get delayed.
As someone who it can't, because I'm playing it right now. full review on Mobile Syrup soon. But yeah, I mean, you know, my favorite thing for that example was someone, you know, who, again, big Final Fantasy fan. I've kind of become jaded with Square Enix and release dates and everything, because they just delay. They had a huge event to finally reveal the release date for Final Fantasy 15. They had a giant spinning wheel to reveal the date. Kind of Funny was there. Greg Miller, Tim Geddes, the creator of Final Fantasy. Everyone was there. And then a month later, they delayed it by a couple months. So they had this giant reveal event in San Francisco, and then they still delayed it. So, and that was like 2 months before release. So to your point, anything can be delayed. So it's always good to have a little bit of apprehension. But
sure. That's what obviously stopped me from, you know, putting in Skull and Bones. It's that apprehension.
It got delayed for a sixth time today.
Yeah, I was super confident up until today.
Wait, did it actually get delayed again?
Yeah.
Yes.
Because aren't they like sixth bound time. To some contract with the government of the country that
they have to make it, just not they don't you have know, to deliver when. It
by a certain point?
I don't think so. I think it's just that they cannot cancel it. Yeah.
That's the worst deal in the history of deals. Right? It's never coming out.
No.
For that exact reason, though, I was very tempted to take something like a Fire Emblem Engage or something that I knew was coming out very, very soon. Mm-hmm. And that's why, mm-hmm. you know what? Just so everybody knows, we are going to be doing another one of these partway through the year, probably in like July or August. Once we've seen a lot of the showcases, I expect we're going to get a Nintendo Direct. We'll probably get the PlayStation and Microsoft versions of those, but we'll also have the Keeleys mid-year. A lot of games still to be announced, and more we find some of the publishers are releasing games months after they are announced, such as with Xenoblade and Fire Emblem. Hopefully, we're going to get a few of those Mario Strikers. So, in case there were any games you did not get to pick up today, such as Atomic Heart, if that does not come out in the first 6 months, you can still pick those up. So we will be doing another one of these. And as they are coming out, hopefully we will have some updates by that mid-year check-in. We will have some scores on the board and we will be updating this on the site. So check out mobilesyrup.com. I will be posting some articles to update not only these games, but other games and how they're reviewing over the year. And we'll find out what the big winners are. But just to recap, from last draft to first. So Dean, you picked up Lies of P, Hogwarts Legacy, Jedi Survivor. Very, very interesting, broad scope of games, but all ones that you're super passionate about, which I love. Brad, Final Fantasy 16, Resident Evil 4, and Sea of Stars. I know what era you grew up in just from that list.
I'm a PlayStation boy, what can I say?
Steve, Spider-Man 2, Forza Motorsport, and Hollow Knight Silksong. All going for the review scores, which I love. You came in with a game plan. And then I picked up The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, Baldur's Gate 3, and Replaced. Also pretty biased picks, but hey, that's where we're at.
You know what's funny, though? Going through each of them and like hearing them listed out one after another for each of us on the panel, I don't think that there's any clear winner. I don't think that there's anyone that has like an inherent leg up on anyone. Like, for instance, if someone walked away with both Zelda and Spider-Man 2, yeah, I would be like, okay, toss in the towel now, because most likely that person's going to win. But they're all kind of even playing fields right now. I think that everyone has a good chance of walking away a winner here.
Yeah, we all have like a surefire AAA game. We have like an indie darling, and then, you know, it's a good mix.
Yeah.
We will roll again when we do it next time, just so that I don't get first pick, because we'll only be drafting two next time. And let's say Mario Odyssey does get drawn. You know, someone might want to pick that up other than me, just to give you that shot. Just maybe.
Maybe.
But that'll do it. That's the draft. If anybody has questions, I'm going to be drafting up an article to explain all of how this is broken down, but should be a fun year. I can't wait. So thank you guys for indulging me in this experience.
Thank you. That's a great concept.
This was a great idea.
Really fun.
So before we end this podcast, what games just are you most excited for? Like, just plainly, don't care about ratings, 2023, top game you're most excited for? Let's start with Steve. Go.
Yeah, I think just like off the top, 2023 is going to be an enormous year for video games. We're even talking about just the first half of the year, and there's so many games to just go through a list. But Diablo 4 is up on my list for one of the most anticipated games this year.
It was on my list. It was there. It was one of my safes. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's get the guests go first. Chris, you're next.
I can only choose one.
Yeah, just one. Are you kidding me?
Only one. I know, I'm so sorry. Probably for me, I hope it comes out this year, Wolf Among Us 2.
I used to love
the Telltale games, and when those went away, I was so, so sad, because I just settle in with an episode for a night, and I just zone out, love making those decisions, and Wolf Among Us is one of my top
so good
picks for that. So I am I replayed it with my partner this year, and she also just fell in love with that. And so it was really cool seeing it from somebody's fresh perspective. And so, yes, I cannot wait for Wolf Among Us 2. That's got to be my topic.
And Brad?
I will just add, first of all, it's very interesting. None of us picked Starfield. I thought maybe Steve might. But it wasn't even on my list either. That was interesting. Because, you know, it's obviously a very noteworthy game. But, yeah, I'm someone who's never loved Bethesda games generally. So, yeah, it was not on my list. But I was shocked. That I figured either Steve or Chris.
I love Skyrim. Skyrim was one of my favorite games. I went to the midnight launch. I was graduating high school the next day. And I still went to the midnight launch. And I still played it way too late, even though I had stuff to do the next day. And I'm not excited at all for this game. It's too big.
I liked Skyrim, but
it's too big, and I'm not a space guy, and it's
for me. As soon as The Witcher 3 came out, like that was better than any. I mean, they're obviously not one to one comparisons, but that was a better like Western style open world RPG than anything Bethesda had done for me personally. So like after that, it's and I think Fallout 4 even took a hit because of it. It came out the same year after The Witcher 3, and it was kind of a letdown for a lot of people. So. Who knows how Starfield would be. I mean, just hearing it, we've got 1,000 planets doesn't appeal to me. I don't need a game that big.
See, stuff like that does appeal to me, just this open world exploration kind of thing. But because I was playing competitively for points and everything, the fact that they haven't confirmed 60 frames per second on console kills it for me. Ooh. I was like, okay, this game could easily fall at a 75 and I wouldn't be shocked. Just because of the frames. And I think that's
really okay.
That can suffer the score immensely for this game.
It's a
hey man, it's gonna have the Bethesda charm. It's gonna have ships crashing through people and bugs galore, and it's gonna be it's gonna be the Bethesda charm.
Does it
charm.
Have a release date this year? It did have
no, first half. Okay, I would assume in June, maybe.
June, July, something like that.
Okay. Yeah.
It was trending, though, just the other day, and I was wondering, why was it trending? And it's because they said that it's not going to be in the Microsoft showcase that is coming up, which is very bizarre, but that also probably means it's getting a dedicated...
It's getting its own.
That's it. Yeah. They confirmed that they're going to spend a lot of time on the game on its own.
Just want to put out there, I am very much looking forward to that game, and I will probably enjoy it, but when it comes to score... Bethesda has not been consistent over the last few years, and that's the only thing that was holding me back. I'm not the biggest Fallout guy, and this looks to be more in the Fallout side of Bethesda than this Elder Scrolls. But I'm excited for this one. I'm a sci-fi geek, and so this is more up my alley.
The most interesting thing that came from a Bethesda related person recently was Pentiment from Josh Sawyer last year.
Oh, huge!
So, and that was a much. It cut away all the open world fat. It was just a tight narrative game. I love that game. So, yeah. But anyway, sorry, to answer your question, I debated between Final Fantasy 16 and Spider-Man. But, I mean, I've been dressing up as Spider-Man since I was, 4 years old. The Insomniac game is one of my favorite stories of that character ever. What they did with Miles was great. And the thought of bringing them together for a story... It sounds really exciting. Maybe we'll Venom that will be good, not like the crappy Tom Hardy movies. It's got to be Spider-Man 2. Like, I can't wait.
Now I guess you're at me. I would also love to see Spider-Man 2 because I love Spider-Man. I Hogwarts Legacy is something I'm excited for. But Lies of P is my most anticipated game this year just because I miss Bloodborne. And
I love it.
So I'm super looking forward to it.
Nice.
Cool. All right. That is it, everyone. I will end. I don't know why I'm saying it like that. And that's it. Thanks for listening to the Syrup Cast Arcade. Nope, that's not it. I keep getting the name wrong. The Syrup Arcade Cast. You can find me on Twitter at The Daily Dean and my Instagram at My Daily Dose. And of course, on Mobile Syrup. Brad, where can people find you? And do you have any recent stories you want to highlight?
Thank you for asking. I do, actually. I was very fortunate in December to take part in a junket for The Last of Us, which was really cool. So I got to speak to Neil Druckmann and Craig Mazin, the co-creators and showrunners of the show, as well as the stars Pedro Pascal, Bella Ramsey, Merle Dandridge, and Gabriel Luna. which was awesome. Got to ask them about filming in Alberta, which was really cool. That kind of that story blew up among like Canadian media, which is just like Daily Hive, Narcity. The former premier of Alberta shared it, which is pretty funny. Because I guess Alberta is just so hyped to finally be featured in something. This is not anything. Toronto or Vancouver for a change. So yeah, and Pedro Pascal especially had really cute, nice things to say about Alberta. And then I did a review on the show as well, because I, you know, very briefly, I was someone who was a little down on it. And I'll freely admit, I was wrong. I ate humble pie. I ate a lot of crow. It won me over. It's really good. I've seen the first few episodes. So yeah, I have a review on that. And I was also on the movie podcast. They're a really cool bunch of guys who review movies and TV shows to talk about the show as well. So you can check out my review on Mobile Syrup as well as our discussion there, and check out those guys in general. Their stuff's really good.
Agreed.
And as for where you can find me, Twitter at Brad Shankar, BradShankar. I don't know why I had to think about that. And mobilesyrup.com.
Cool. Thank you. And Chris, people can't find you anywhere, but they can find you in the comment section. So
I don't exist. Yeah. But with that being said, you can find me on mobilesyrup.com. I occasionally post articles there. And I have one article besides our fantasy draft that will be going up that I have had been working on for a very long time. Brad sent me a code for a game that was months ago, and I never posted a review. I never finished the review because I never won a match. And so I have never been so bad at a game in my life. And so I've been playing it for months now, just working towards a single online victory. And it finally happened. I finally won on my own merits in Them's Fighting Herds. And so I've been playing this My Little Pony game for like 4 months.
What?
Just trying to win one online match. And I finally did it. So okay. The review, thank you. The review will be going up soon. Not really review. It's more like my experience beating my head against a wall in a fighting game community, because that is not a cute game. It is hardcore.
I completely forgot I sent that to you. Because it was a few months ago. I mean, you did a really great thing. It could have just been a shitpost style thing, but you did a really funny thing about the motocross Monster Energy drink game, about your whole rise to career with that. So I'm expecting something really fun in the same vein with this My Little Pony game. So yeah, I'm really
fun might not be the word. Trust me, that is a hardcore game for hardcore gamers, and I was not up to snuff. So yeah, you can look out for that on the site soon.
Cool. And Steve, where can people find you, and do you have any stories you like to highlight, and they don't have to be on Mobile Syrup?
You can find me and all my work across the internet at svigvari. In terms of pieces of work, I mean, I did some CES stuff on Mobile Syrup. I'm usually there popping up every once in a while doing the news beat, or like you said previously, like gaming and sponsored posts. So if you ever see my post there, give it some traction. That's cool. I like that. again, thank you guys for inviting me onto the show. Like I said, anytime I get to interact with you guys and you guys at work, it's always a blast.
You're like that RPG class, like a freelancer that can just do anything. Like not even like you're literally a freelancer, yeah. But that's also a class sometimes in RPGs. But yeah, you handle everything. You can do everything. So it's great.
Thank you.
I actually have a little bone to pick with Steve, because him and Brad got me onto Marvel Snap, and now I'm addicted.
Yes!
It's not great.
But it is pretty great, right?
I showed Brad yesterday. I was at level 900 of those like collection levels, and now I'm at 1,000. So, I mean, it's crazy. I love the game. It. Anyways, let's end this, because it's going on for a little while. And as always, you can find all of our content on mobilesyrup.com and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at mobilesyrup. Bye, guys.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.